Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast. What to watch
on Point of View.
That's how we ring in the weekend with Leroy and Mark on What to Watch. Good evening and welcome, Leroy.
Hello, so nice to see you.
Always.
Yes.
So, I liked your selection.
Did you?
I did. I wasn't as horrified as I usually am.
I thought,
I liked it.
Which one was your favorite?
Actually, I like quite a few.
Yeah.
I liked Friendship.
Yes.
Of course, Jane Austen was nice. I liked just Jane Austen as well.
I did.
No, I didn't. You know what? I think Shadow Force was just not for me.
It wasn't. It's actually a sad thing when it comes to Kerry Hilson.
Yes.
Kerry Washington.
And she was a disappointment from the minute.
It started off.
From 0 minute. From the minute we saw her.
I always appreciate her. After we've seen her in Olivia Pope and everything she's done
It was a little. For me, I don't know. I was toying between, am I let down because... I don't know. I'm not. So I'm trying to talk about this Olivia Pope thing that you've just referred to. And I'm trying to decide whether... Okay, let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think you and I speak about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You really... And it's at moments like this... You really, really get to appreciate the role of a director, of a team,
yes.
of this production team.
Yes.
Because Kerry Washington, before being Olivia Pope, was just this.
She was. So this is what... But now she's regressed because remember...
That's my point. So she's come right back to where she was before she became Olivia Pope.
Now. Let's look at the timeline because she's done Olivia Pope. She puts her on a pedestal.
Over a long period of time.
I mean, Scandal was a fantastic series. And I think a lot of us still look at the White House through Olivia Pope eyes.
Absolutely.
And then she does a few movies in between. And then she does this,
but
right?
This is... So when I saw this, I had two things that went through my mind. Oh, this is vintage Kerry. I remember. My immediate thought was, I shouldn't have expected
more.
But
now I'm hurt by that because remember she did that movie with Tyler Perry that you and I were like, we were anticipating was going to be absolutely terrible. And it was one of the better movies we watched in the year. And she then regresses. That's why my issue that she went forward two steps and then sort of went back three.
Again, you really, and I think my colleague and I were having this conversation about support of the production team, right? So people get to see the final product. They get to see what's in front of the camera. They get to hear what's what we're doing now on the radio. But behind this is a machine.
A big one.
A really, really big machine. One of the pieces falls off. I can tell you now, the machine is not stable. And we really don't give enough props to people who prop up the machine and make it work. And she, for me, is a classic example of how Scandal, we then have to give props to what was happening there.
And the writers.
That whole machine was working. Left alone, this is what can happen.
But now see, when you talk about the big machine and how hard it is to turn this big ship around, for me, this is what the issue is with this particular movie. Because I think I've got to counter to your argument and say, remember that Omar Sy, who is the gentleman who plays her husband in the movie and to whom she has the child and she sort of leaves him for 4 years because they're part of this covert operation where they're not allowed as assassins or whatever mercenaries they are to date each other and have children, and they break that rule. He's from Netflix's Lupin.
Yeah.
That movie, that whole series around this guy who is a sort of con man because he reads this old book and it's all French and all that. I think this movie is an upskill for him because he is now coming up from being a guy who's done all the Netflix work and now he's sitting in a blockbuster. The issue here is that I think it's actually very questionable casting because you do want to put castmates who are at least on the same level, and
it's
I think
not
here
always
they weren't.
Obvious.
Yeah,
it's not always obvious in this sense. When a Kerry, for instance, where she is right now in her career, I'm not sure, but I'm just betting that not much casting happened here.
Absolutely not.
It was, well, we want Kerry Washington.
Yeah.
That, right? So that's the conversation they were having. And so they got Kerry Washington. Sometimes it is a mistake to do that.
Yeah.
Because what also sometimes happens is that you have a production. And we are now speaking of all kinds of productions, right? You have a big production. And in this production, everybody else is not bringing their bit to the fore, mm-hmm. right?
They're not coming to the party.
But then there are others who are just hungrier.
Yeah.
And you see this, just this bright star coming out of something like that.
Mm.
It just so happens that he was hungrier.
I think so.
He was hungrier, not because the machine propped him up. He was hungry. He has been ready for a moment. And he's probably been doing the work. And this is the moment he's taken.
You and I always talk about there are actors who come to work. You can just tell that this one came to the office. He came to the office and he came to do the work.
And oftentimes you do find that in a disappointing production, you have this one shining star. They shine because they alone have committed themselves to moving ahead.
Yeah.
Not because the entire production is doing well.
Because he sees the moment for what it
Correct.
Is.
Correct.
And I think what happened with Shadow Force is that also a lot of the writing was quite farcical mm-hmm. because, as you say, the machine needs all the cogs to work.
Yeah.
But I think someone even said that it seems like the script was written by AI.
Yeah.
Because you've got these moments where there's a huge disjoint, right? I'll give you a classic example. Within the movie, some point in the movie, Kerry Washington and Omar Sy get separated. Now remember, they're a couple and they have a child together. Yeah. I won't tell you when they separate and what causes the separation. However, when you look at the situation that Omar is in as a father raising a child, and you look at the situation that Kerry Washington's been living in, it's a huge disjointer because they also then doesn't seem like it makes sense from a parental instinct point of view. And remember, even though this is disbelief and we're suspending it, we need to at least be rooted in some level of going, okay, I know a mother would act this way. I'm always reminded of that movie with, I think it's just Jennifer Lopez, if I'm not mistaken, where she plays the mom.
Yeah.
And she just goes rogue because her daughter was hurt and she just loses her mind because her family was killed.
Yeah.
That made sense to me. Grief can push you to that level. Here, I was looking for the plot, and sometimes was a bit hard to catch, and I think, as you said,
and as part of what we were just saying now about the entire team, a good, let's say at every level, a good director would have said, this script doesn't make sense, let's fix it here,
let's write.
While they are actually filming, even at the point where they're on set, the director has the liberty to say, you know what, Leroy, that doesn't quite make sense. I want you to do this and that just so that the story comes together.
Exactly.
You can tell with this, nobody came to work.
Yeah.
No one came to work. Nobody. The floor, no one said, guys,
something's missing here.
I don't know. Hey, can we maybe think about this? Can we just pause? What do you guys think? Because if somebody had, you wouldn't have the kind of problems that we have here.
So I want to argue with the later one to see where we had those problems. Mm. But in my opinion, the raison, the rationale behind the story was so much stronger that some of the stuff you can
let go. Yeah. It's always, I mean, there are always some spots where not everything is perfect.
Yeah.
And one or two things, you know.
Yeah.
Don't make sense, but you can forgive them.
You can. And I think because it's rooted in some level of truth. And for me, Shadow Force is one of those that you watch because you're interested in Kerry Washington and you enjoy Omar Sy because of Lupin. But I think you also find that it's also nice to see a Mr. and Mrs. Smith sort of spoof where the characters are black. It isn't theaters right now. It's called Shadow Force. And please tweet me and let me know what you think about it.
I'm sad for her.
Yeah.
I'm sad for her.
It's a bit heartbreaking because she also wears this terrible wig in it, which also...
No, I'm everything about it...
hurts my feelings.
There's nothing flattering about this movie for her.
True.
Jane Austen.
So Jane Austen is an interesting movie for me. Because also, it's one of those movies where the main character is actually not very likable, you know, and even the family says she's not likable. The whole idea is Jane Austen Wrecked My Life is a movie around this young lady who lives in Paris. She owns a bookshop with her friend, and her friend ends up submitting some of her literary works to a sort of retreat, say like a... you know, one of those you go off and you do two weeks of this writing symposium, and then you come back out and your writing is beautiful and amazing. And while she's there, her life is really just very difficult, right? Because she's one of those people who, for instance, she's always using a bicycle, like a tickling bicycle, not motorbike, because once upon a time her dad suffered a stroke while they were driving, and she's now afraid of cars. So she's a very highly strong individual. And remember, they live in France. And so her friend says, go, you know, this thing is happening in England. We'll take the ferry across, and then you'll be able to go in and really delve down into your writing. There she meets someone who makes her forget the friend, because as much as the friend at home is my best friend, there's also some romantic linkages there. And now we watch her go through these, you know, weeks where she's now trying to find herself and who she likes, whether it's Oliver, who's the great grandson of Jane Austen and is part of this retreat, or her best friend who is at home, who is waiting for her to come home, and she's sort of lost in between. And the whole time we are very aware that there are personality traits that I thought were so lovely and human. For instance, they describe where she lives with her sister and her nephew as her sister's quite promiscuous. And it's not something you want to hear about someone who has a child, you know. So it's absolutely riveting. I enjoyed it because, again, it's that lovely complex characters.
It was,
the story is very,
it had a lot of depth.
Yeah, and the story was easy. It was easy to digest and enjoy.
But it was a lot of depth. Friendship, I also like.
Friendship was interesting because I have this very big issue where, as a grown man, I'm struggling to understand how you propose friendship to people and you don't seem like you're trying to be romantic. You know, sometimes you meet people and you go, "You're just, I really enjoy having a chat with you."
No, and that you can't say now, "I really like you."
Yeah.
You can't say that.
No.
Because that's then seen as something else.
Yeah.
And people are going to misread that.
Absolutely.
And you also can't be too open about that.
Yes. Because my thing is, I mean, I, for instance, have people, we always joke about being at the gym where you'll train with people and you'll see them every day and never know their names. And so I've taken to asking, "Sorry, Pamela, so we train together all the time in this class. What's your name?" And that's always so jarring for people because they end up going, "Oof, do I want you to be that close? Are you trying to be a friend?" I'm just like, I just want to not call you that lady. You know, I want to call you by your name. And then as I've grown up as well, it's been more difficult to say that. Like, listen, can we hang out in a very platonic sense? Like, I'm very happily married. You're happily married. I just like the way you think about politics, cars, whatever. And people always assume the worst. And so this is a story about that kind of friendship where Craig, who's living with his wife, and they get mail. The postman delivers the mail at the wrong house. The wife, who's in cancer remission, says, "Please take the mail down to the house." Happens to be a new family that moves in there. And they strike it off. It's a friendship that becomes quite fun. And they end up going to go play and smoke a cigarette somewhere. And, you know, on a bit of an adventure. But then they discover that actually the friendship is not so great, at least from one of them. And so the other one sort of breaks up with them. You know, say, "Listen, actually, Pamela, our friendship is not working well. This is Austin and Craig." And so Craig is still not okay because it's like, "But, you know, why don't you love me?" And so with his relationship and his wife being very complicated, they end up meeting again with Austin, and he ends up having to confront him that, "Why am I not good enough as a friend for you?" And for me, it was like very close to home, because on a daily basis, you meet people where you go, "I love the way you think. I don't want anything more from you than just the company and the chatting, and can we have a conversation?"
Yeah.
So it is called friendship, and it is in theaters.
I really liked it. It's also, it's not the kind of story that is a common story.
Yeah.
I liked it.
And it's also men. You know,
exactly.
I think I enjoyed that it was guys. But,
also, I found the acting to be so authentic. I don't know if that would be the right word, because, you know, it's also acting. But there was some beautiful chemistry there that didn't feel forced, very difficult to get from men, that didn't feel forced, that just felt right. They were all hitting the right notes, no big names.
Yeah, exactly. No big names, wasn't something fabulous.
Yes.
It wasn't a...
it's not a blockbuster. But boy, you're happy you watched it.
When I was thinking about who I would have cast in a different role, and my mind immediately went to the trio of Matt Damon, Brad Pitt, and George Clooney, because they've got the established friendship.
Yeah.
But I think you're quite right. They found a way.
Loved
and I also like the humanness about it, right?
Yes.
because rejection doesn't always need to be romantic.
No,
you can just reject me as like
I liked it
as a friend. Yeah. So it's in theaters. It's called Friendship. You're gonna absolutely love it, and it's one you're gonna get you like driving around going, actually, there's a guy I want to be friends with. Maybe I'm gonna propose friendship to him.
I liked it. Lily.
Lily is my favorite.
Yes. Yes. Lily.
Yes.
Oh, my word.
So Lily's my favorite.
You know, this is a movie South Africans should be watching right now.
Yeah. So,
right now.
So I want you to just think about, but also I saw, and it's going to sound so weird. So Lily is about a white woman in America, in Alabama. But it reminded me so much of Winnie Mandela, right? Mm. So, and I'll tell you why. Because, so she works for a tire company and she realized there's a pay disparity between what men and women are being paid, as it is the rule in 90% of the world. But she's also going through like very systematic like work sexual harassment.
Africans must watch this movie.
You know what? I mean, there's moments where you sit there and you go, come on now, you cannot, how are we allowing this to happen? But you must also remember this is happening in the 1970s.
Can I break something to you?
Yeah.
I think it's happening now
on a grander scale.
I think it's happening right now. And I think that for me is exactly why people should watch this. Because it's so difficult also to express the kinds of things that are happening in the workplace. People are scared to lose their jobs.
Absolutely.
Jobs are not easy to come by. And so you find the culture pushes and pushes and pushes, and people are just hanging around just to make sure that they can keep their families together and, you know, they don't starve. This is, for me, such a great movie for South Africans to watch right now.
And I think it's because women don't necessarily look like they're struggling. So that
they pull it together.
They pull it together.
They keep going.
Yeah. So you and I work the same job. Mm-hmm. We're behind the mic. We've got the similar shows on similar radio stations. Mm-hmm. We should be earning rand for rand exactly the same. Which is not the case.
Never the case.
Yeah. But you have taken to not buying a brand new car every 4 years. Mm-hmm. You've made a point of getting a good mechanic so that you can live within your means, dare I say, even live below your means. Whereas your male counterparts live very differently. And then there's the intersectionality, right? Where you're not only female, but you're also black. You know, you're not only female and black, but you're also homosexual. Then there's all those complications. So what Lily did was that she helped put together the Fair Pay Act. So through her taking, when she found out after 20 years of working for a tire company, being the only female supervisor, and found out what the disparity was, she took it all the way to the Supreme Court and the administration of President Obama, and then enacted this law. What was wild for me was that, yes, the movie's a bit dated. Yes, there's a bit, you know, coloration and some technical cinematic issues there. But you actually get to see in living color what it's like from a, you know, scene to scene to scene. I mean, obviously it's a movie, so it's not as extensive as it could be. But you start seeing how women on a daily basis are meant to just make do.
Absolutely.
Right? You sort of don't get the fancy thing, you get the better one, you do substitution, and then you sort of work harder. She falls at work terribly and she gets hurt.
For me, that's, you know, again, maybe I appreciated it more because of when we obviously engage with stories that we engage with Monday to Wednesday, or to at least a Thursday until you come through. You see this all the time, that people are just getting by, but it's so, and nobody seems to want to take accountability, and it's become the norm to just not treat people well, to, if you can get away with murder, get away with murder. Come and explain your way through, and even get quite aggressive about the fact that you're being asked, why are you treating people this way?
Yeah. And the people who obviously are benefiting from the patriarchal system that we live in will then rally behind the person and say, no.
Absolutely.
But I mean, it goes even deeper for me to the way we even deal with like systematic corruption in South Africa on a daily basis. We scream loud and proud about how we're fighting corruption on a daily basis. But you look at like stories about Babita Deokaran, who lost her life trying to unearth corruption in a hospital, and we then move on from it like nothing's happened because, it's just another woman. We'll find someone else. And I think for me, what was crazy was that you see how, yes, her activism did affect legislative change, but it didn't trickle down, because how are we in 2025 still dealing with the same issues? South Africa being exactly the same as the UK, as the United States, and other jurisdictions. I think if you watch this and you are unmoved, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Come for me, I'm ready.
He went right there. That was so swift.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Yeah. It really is. So it's in theaters. It's now playing. It's called Lily with a double L. Please watch it for my sake.
Adult House.
So Adult House was a play we did in high school, right? And I found it to be very interesting because it revolves around this idea about being a doll. And Nora is just this pretty girl who is married to this man. And she goes through all the abuse until she gets to a point where she's had it. Up to here, no further, she says. And she turns around and she walks out the door. That's the Doll's House Part 1. Now Doll's House Part 2 is reimagined. And the wonderful thing about it is that you don't need to have watched A Doll's House 1 for you to understand what happens here, because this is a story about a mother who's left, gone out to go find in the world what she couldn't find in her marriage, and finds that she needs to come back home to get certain parts of it to almost build herself up again. Mm. It's absolutely riveting, especially because we're talking about how, you know, you get to a point where you're pushed to your extreme limits and you have no other choice but to leave, but for your own sanity, and because of just how the gender gap is in South Africa and the rest of the world. And then you come back and you realize that actually you must go back to that marriage and knock on the door and ask for help again. So is it a tale between your legs? Is it a tale of power in being able to admit you're wrong? You know, where do you sit? And I had so many conflicted issues going on right now, because I'm like, you left, why'd you come back? You know, so please do yourself the favor of just, if you just read a quick summary of A Doll's House 1 and go to the theater on the square and watch A Doll's House Part 2. It is running from yesterday to the 7th of June.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Leroy.
Bye-bye.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.